Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm William.
This is the podcast where we talk about all things tabletop role-playing games.
Today we are talking about Olhydra, the princess of elemental evil water.
One, two, three, four.
Shout out to the
yeah. Welcome, adventurers, to the Dungeon Cast.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I finally healed from the plague.
My God, man. My gods.
I was sick for like 2.5 weeks. I still have a little soreness. People might be able to hear it over the mic. But I'm mostly like 95% better.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for being patient with us while we scrapped together an episode.
Thank you, Brian, for doing that.
Yeah. We're all over it. Yeah. If only I hadn't missed that one episode last year, my Iron Man streak would still be strong.
Which episode did you miss? I'm trying to remember.
You did one, an interview.
Oh, I did an interview. Yes.
The with kids
the kids D&D thing. Yeah. I'm sorry about your Iron Man streak.
Oh, well.
It happens.
I'm still batting like a 98% or something like that.
Yeah, 99. Let's say 99 for sure.
Pretty good. But well, but yeah, thanks, guys. Really appreciate it. We're getting to the P.O. Box letters finally this week.
Indeed.
There's one we're going to physically respond to as well.
Oh, sweet. Sounds good.
Spoilers for later.
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
We are obligated per what is in there to do it, and you'll see why.
Okay. It's all new and surprising to me, folks, so it's very new.
Yeah, I let Will be surprised. Yes. I read some of these. We're going to read the other ones that I haven't yet today, but thank you, guys. Let's get to it. Hail Hydra. I'm so excited that we're finally doing Marvel stuff.
We're not doing Marvel stuff.
I didn't know
stuff.
There was an O in there. Is the O so they know?
It's not just a no, there's also an L. It's Olhydra.
Old Hydra, like the one before Captain.
Good old Hydra. No, this fortunately does not have anything to do with Hydra from Marvel Comics or Marvel Studios. This is all D&D, all the way down.
Thank you.
And I will remind you and the audience that it is Year of the Elemental.
That's right.
And I don't know if I've ever mentioned it on this show, but I love elemental stuff.
Oh.
I really love elemental stuff.
Yeah, I mean, my first stint with elemental stuff was probably
Avatar: The Last Airbender,
Golden Sun. Ooh, then Avatar:
Golden
The Last
Sun.
Airbender.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good,
where
good
I was start, like, "Oh, yeah. The four elements." Whoa.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess for me, it goes all the way back to the old Final Fantasy games.
Oh yeah, that would have been a good one.
My deep childhood, but whether it's the base four elements or the para elements of ice and magma, quasi elements of mist and lightning, I just love elements. I think they're thematic. They lend themselves very well to high fantasy adventure. So for me, it's personally been a joy to research a lot of this year's topics already, even though we're still very early in the year. And I just want to say that. I love elemental stuff. I love Year of the Elemental.
Same. Big stuff. It's really cool getting to learn the D&D side of it.
Yes.
Which is fun.
Yes. And a lot of really old school first edition D&D stuff is very elemental. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So the elements themselves may be completely neutral and even unaligned by nature, but this is not true of all elementals. Some elementals do indeed align with the forces of good and or the forces of evil. And today's topic focus is one such elemental. An elemental that aligns so hard, she is known as one of the elemental evils. Her name is Olhydra, and she is the princess of evil water and water elementals. And as her title implies, she is in fact quite evil.
Yeah, okay.
So let's get into it.
Well, before
get into
before we
it,
do.
Go ahead.
So Imix is one of the elemental evils as well?
Yes. So these elemental evils are a category of elementals called Archomentals.
Right, okay.
Right? Archomentals. And there is, as far as I know, there's one for each of the four base elements. And then there's also Cryonax, who's just ice.
Yeah, a random shoo-in.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's just, and he's trying to make ice the fifth element. And you know what? More power to him, I guess.
Freezer Gorgon.
Freezer Gorgon. He's definitely Demogorgon's, like, nephew or something, right?
He
definitely looks like it. But anyways, our focus is on the world of water, the unfrozen version of ice.
Got it.
And
okay.
Olhydra. So Olhydra, the princess of evil water, is a powerful archomental from the elemental plane of water. She is known as the princess of evil water creatures, princess of watery evil, mistress of the black tide, the crushing wave, the dark tide, and the well of endless anguish.
Ooh.
In her most often depicted state, she appears as a huge cresting wave, roughly 20 feet.
Or 6 meters.
High and 15 feet.
That's 4.5 meters, folks.
Wide. Weighing roughly 5,000 pounds.
2,267 kilograms.
With two eyes like large pearls.
There's no metric for pearls.
No,
there's
no. Pearls are just pearls. Olhydra has been described as an endlessly breaking wave of water cascading across the ground, furiously churning and smashing everything in its path. This huge amorphous blob of liquid seems to have almost human-like features buried within its depths.
So just like a tsunami.
Yeah, just like a tsunami with a face.
Yeah, that's scary.
It is scary. It's quite scary, actually.
I saw a cool video with lots of different tsunamis over the ages and their estimated heights. And they, you know, they'll put it next to like the Eiffel Tower or whatever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh man.
Which the Eiffel Tower is very tall.
The Eiffel Tower is very tall, and to have tsunamis taller than that is very horrifying.
That's pretty crazy. Yeah, it's terrifying as hell.
The 20-foot tsunami is nothing to. That is a tsunami.
No, that's a very big wave, but yes. It's also a wave you could surf.
Yeah, I mean, they're all waves you can surf.
Olhydra is very surfable.
I've seen people surf 50-foot waves.
Yeah, see, that's crazy.
I've seen people eat it on them, too, and that's not great.
No, that's not great.
Nah, man.
Have I ever told you surfing, and this is probably going to get, surfing is a thing I've always dreamed of learning to do proficiently.
Oh.
I've never done it. I know we're SoCal. We live near the beach, near enough to the beach. It's always been a dream of mine that I've just never followed up on.
Don't go after the rain.
I won't.
Because
okay.
That's bad.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, all the detritus gets pushed out into the
ocean. That makes
a
lot of sense, yes.
So give it a week or two.
Yeah, don't go after the rain.
And protect
rule
your
number one.
Protect your nipples.
Oh, yeah. You know I'm wearing the whole suit. I got to go
after
the
way.
Dude,
I did it the first time I went surfing, and my nipples hurt so bad.
Tell me more. I'm kidding.
There's nothing more
here.
There's
nothing more to tell. No. Okay, let's get back to Olhydra. So there are two more physical depictions of the Princess of Evil Water, and they are as follows. Olhydra appears in the form of a swirling mass of seawater. When it suits her, though, she can transform into a beautiful blue-skinned sea nymph whose gray-green eyes swirl like stormy seas. Those who witness her in this form are drawn to her, yet in her eyes they can see power and wickedness.
Okay, so it looks evil when you see it.
Yeah, it's like alluring, but obviously evil as hell.
You look strong in a bad way.
You look strong in a bad way. Olhydra surges forth tirelessly and relentlessly. She delights in creating dangerous and destructive manifestations of elemental water, especially maelstroms and floods. She's eager to assert her power by smashing any vessel that dares venture into her realm, and lays waste to villages or towns established within her reach. Olhydra erodes that which she cannot batter down and drown. She is patient, retreating into the face of adversity, only to return stronger than before.
Okay. Are we going to get into, like, is this an ocean-based creature? I know it's the elemental plane of evil. Like, it's evil water.
Evil water.
Is that just all water? Because a tsunami implies the ocean.
Yeah, it is all water, but yes, she, in the next paragraph, I say, Olhydra prefers to remain in or near large bodies of water, seas, lakes, rivers, sometimes great subterranean pools. But when we're talking about the plane of water, there's the border plane, and then there's the deep plane, right? And so the border plane is like this big open ocean, and you'll see some islands and stuff, and you know there's a sky and a sun, but the water's deep and the life is plentiful here.
Okay.
And then you have, as you go out further and further, And what this looks like is up for debate. I've seen it described a few ways, but there stops being a sky. There stops being anything but water. Everything is water in all directions. Oh. And that's the deep plane of water. And so she can and does roam and exist throughout this entire plane of existence.
I wonder what that event horizon looks like.
Yeah, I just picture it. Like the water just must curve until finally you reach a wall, right? And it's just a wall of ocean that goes up forever.
But then you can ride... I guess gravity
would stop you from going up, but I don't know. The planes, the elemental planes specifically, are a place where the rules of reality really seem to break.
Yeah, because I'm trying to picture how I would describe it to a player mm-hmm. crossing that threshold mm-hmm. if they need to go there. Maybe just a lot of waves start rolling in and you get tossed under.
Yeah, and eventually,
and no matter how high you go, you can't
exactly.
get back.
Yeah, I like that. That's actually a really nice transition.
Kind of some. Black Pearl stuff, and you know, then they flip the map or whatever that thing. What is that scene?
They
flip upside down and they're all underwater. Flips over.
Yeah. It's been a long time, man, but I know the scene you're talking about.
Man. I'm back to drawing on pirates. It also reminds me of the 88th and 89th Abyssal Layers.
Funny that you bring up those layers, or and maybe not those layers specifically, but it's funny that you bring up the Abyss because a certain Demon Lord's going to show up today.
Hell yeah.
Let's keep going. Olhydra is a surprisingly creative and wistful entity with a rough and turbulent demeanor and a passion for life. Sometimes, though, she is calm and serene with the capacity for thoughtful reflection. Her foulness temporarily darkens the water she passes through, which I'm not sure if that means she just smells bad or she's just so evil. She causes like an evil miasma to follow wherever she goes.
Okay. You know, I wonder what happens when you drink that soup.
Don't drink the soup, bro. Olhydra harbors an intense hatred of Imix.
Cool.
As he does of her, as we talked in the Imix episode.
Yeah.
And nurses her enmity through constant schemes to destroy him. This goal is so all-consuming that it sometimes prevents her from tending to the needs of her own plane. She spends a great deal of time hiding in her palace, consulting with her numerous water-weird advisors, and plotting her next attack against Imix. Now, I find these numerous water-weird advisors, who were brought up many times across quite a few sources, do you know what a water-weird is? Let's start there. Okay. Water weirds are water elementals.
Okay.
That usually, in my experience, take on the form of like a dragon or a serpent, like a sea serpent.
Just all soupy?
Just made of water.
Yeah.
Just made of water. But the only thing that makes a water weird different from a normal water elemental, in my experience, is that they're usually bound to a single pool of water. And they can extend themselves out, but only so far, and they can never leave that pool of water.
The water temple boss.
The water temple bus is a time. Water. Yes, absolutely. Except for that one has like that organic kind of like part of it.
Yeah, it has like a weird...
If you ignore that, then yes, it's a water weird. Very much so.
Okay.
But the thing about water weirds is, in my experience and everything I've ever read about them, is they're not particularly intelligent, and elementals in general aren't particularly intelligent. Yet she has these water weird advisors, and I want to know more, but they haven't written more.
They're all chemistry. No composition of organic brain matter.
Yeah, I'm not sure why these water weirds are different from other water weirds and smart enough to advise a demigod, but they are, and that's cool, and I want to know more about them.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, moving on. So surprisingly, she gives little thought to Ben-Hadar, the good archimental who shares her plane. Her single-minded pursuit of Imix and Ben-Hadar's indifference toward her ensure that the two water archimentals maintain a detached neutrality toward each other. And it's at this point that I ask myself, what the fuck is the point of the archimentals of good? They don't do anything. Okay, the one who, so far we've talked about two. I don't even remember the fire one's name, but Imix beat the shit out of him, and he's basically nothing now.
Okay.
Ben-Hadar just ignores Olhydra. So how good is he?
You could think of it, I guess, like one of them is just doing what fire should do or what water should do, and the other one is just evil.
Yeah,
so it's
right.
not really good. It's more like a neutral entity.
Yeah, they come across, Ben-Hadar comes across as a neutral entity, but he's supposed to be the good archimental of water.
Maybe good by comparison.
He's good by comparison. So anyways, moving on. Olhydra shares the elemental plane of water with the deities Blipdulpoop.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. Oh, I got it in one, though. Did you hear that?
Yeah, you nailed it.
which, for those who don't know who that is one of the made-up deities of the Kuotoa. the Kuja have this whole thing where they make up deities and they believe in them so fervently they come into
manifest,
being.
Which is how it works. They actually have a better understanding of how to do deities than a lot of
that's
cultures.
That's partially
in D&D.
How it works. I mean, it is how it works because it does work.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Clearly.
You're very right. So Blipdul Pulp is like the main Kuatoa goddess. Then there's also Iedro and Persona. They're not two gods I'm familiar with, but the Ohydra does share the plane of water with them.
Okay.
And occasionally Ohydra comes into conflict with them, although she lets nothing distract her for long, and her dedication to Imix's eradication.
Right on.
So Ohydra counts Dagon, a demon lord who resides on the 89th layer of the Abyss,
the
as
homie.
One of her greatest allies.
The homie Dagon. Fist bump to the homie.
Fist bump to the homie. Rumors hold that the two are lovers and might have sired twin daughters. Do I hear Daddy Dagon?
Yeah.
Is that a Daddy Dagon?
Deep Daddy.
Deep Daddy Dagon. Whoa.
I can't keep making those jokes.
Deep within Ohydra's coral fortress lurks a trio of sea hags called the Blue Coven.
Okay.
Although they once unsuccessfully attempted to control Ohydra, she respected their tenacity and accepted them as loyal worshippers instead of destroying them like you would kind of expect her to do. The coven long ago merged into a single entity with three distinct bodies, granting it magical power and access to dark secrets known only to it. And that's really all I have on the Blue Coven.
Oh, okay.
One entity, used to be three sea hags, super devoted to Ohydra.
Dude, hags are strong.
Hags are strong.
They get randomly up to some nasty, nasty stuff.
They are. They are indeed nasty.
They're the harbingers of incursions and like all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, they get up to dirty work for sure. And then there's this thing called the Coral Throne, right? So we've talked about genies. We've talked about, there's four of the basic types. And in the Plane of Water, the water genies are the Merids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there is a localized, like, central power structure of Merids with the top Merid, the Grand Sultan, maybe, of the Merids. I couldn't find more information on this, so there's a little conjecture here.
Okay.
But it's called the Coral Throne.
Okay.
And apparently, the Coral Throne traditionally pays lip service to Ohydra, but the chaotic nature of the Merids and the frequent turnover in their leadership make them unreliable allies at best.
All right.
So basically, from the DM standpoint, it's like you could totally have like the Merids team up with Ohydra, or vice versa. You could totally have the Merids betray Ohydra, and now it's a civil war. Like,
ooh,
fun stuff, yeah, you could work with. But yeah, Merids are naturally chaotic neutral, so yeah, I could see them being unreliable. Ohydra, the princess of water evil, lives in the ruins of a castle made of black coral submerged in a great indigo canyon on the elemental plane of water. An army of evil water elementals and lesser water weirds keeps a faithful watch over her grand citadel, which they claim was once the capital of a great undersea empire conquered ages ago.
Okay, that's fucking cool.
It's pretty neat. Of all the princes of elemental evil, Ohydra is the most interested in mortals. She recognizes pirates and seafaring raiders as her agents, whether they know it or not, because they redden the water with blood and occasionally drop treasure into her clutches. She sometimes spares the very worst of them, knowing that they will deliver others to her.
Oh, some lucky pirates are actually just like unknowing agents of Ohydra.
Yeah, they might be favored of Ohydra and not know it, or know it, you know,
yeah,
one way
maybe.
Or another. Yeah. Ohydra has the largest cult amongst the Archimentals, and it's no secret that she wishes to ascend to true divinity. The large diversity of the sea life on the material plane helps to ensure this surplus of worshippers, and she counts Sahagin, Skrag, Sea Hags, Kraken, Sea Wolves, Eyes of the Deep, and many other sea creatures among her faithful. Because of her cult size, she's closer to becoming a deity than the other evil Archimentals. She commands legions of evil water elementals, water grues, water mephits, callers from the deep, and as well as a renegade sect of Hezrau demons that she lured away from Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
That is unfortunate. Demogorgon not going to like that.
No, but Dagon might be like, yo, bro, she's my girlfriend, though. Let it slide.
That's true. It's like, hey,
we have kids, dude.
Turn your four eyes away on this instance, for she is deep like me.
Indeed, yeah.
We can all be homies. She's my girlfriend.
She's my girlfriend, bro. No, I can see Demogorgon being like, yeah, whatever, fine.
I don't know. I'll just make some more.
I'll just make some more.
The demon lords don't make... I guess they could make demons.
They can raise them. They can raise them up from lesser stuff. But yeah, they don't.
The abyss makes demons.
Spontaneously generates.
And
them,
then the abyss, each layer makes... Do they come from like the depths of the abyss, or do they come from the each layer as the
each layer should be capable
shitting
of
shitting out some demons.
Yes. So my understanding is they can both spontaneously generate, and they also can be formed from the souls of those who end up here, the chaotic evil souls that end up here. So,
there's some gateway between the 89th layer and the elemental plane of water, from what I'm understanding from this. So there
could be.
There could just be demons rampant in the ocean.
I think, there has to be some sort of traversal that, and honestly, it's not surprising because the plane of fire has a lot of portals to the nine hells.
Yeah.
So, okay, the plane of water probably has a lot of portals, whether they were created by El Hydra on purpose or maybe they naturally happen.
Yeah, the wayward tides of blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, yeah, absolutely. So now we jump over to fourth edition lore for El Hydra.
Neat.
Mostly because it's tied in with 4E's version of the Elemental Chaos and the 4E Dawn Pantheon.
Okay.
And because we kind of have to keep those things in mind, we'll just, this is just fourth edition lore. So let's
get
favorite.
Into it. Your favorite. The taste.
Usually.
Your favorite food.
Dude, you could talk a lot of shit about 4E. You really can. And I'll even admit that there are many flaws in 4E, but 4E lore rocks, and I don't care what anyone says. It's literally my favorite D&D setting is 4th edition.
I trust you as a person that does a D&D lore show.
Thank you. So, since the dawn of time, the princes of elemental evil have ruled over the swirling chaos of creation. When the gods were young, the princes expanded their power to the far reaches of the elemental chaos. Exiled to their forgotten keeps after the Dawn War, these entities now seek to reclaim their lost status through service to the Elder Elemental Eye, which is secretly Atharis Dune.
Mm.
Though pirates and sea captains worship a number of different gods, it is the name of El Hydra that they silently curse when violent seas sunder their ships. Since the dawn of time, the Princess of Elemental Water has commanded the seas of the Elemental Chaos, and until Melora, she is the 4E's premier nature goddess.
Okay.
Both of sea and of land.
Okay, all nature, all
stuff.
All
the time.
Okay.
Melora claimed her sphere of influence. El Hydra was the lurking threat that within the world's oceans. Like the other princes of elemental evil, El Hydra seeks to unleash the limitless power of the Elder Elemental Eye. For El Hydra, this drive for power is a thirst that she cannot quench. Mm-hmm. Since the end of the Dawn War, El Hydra has remained banished to her coral keep, which Melora cast down into a wide chasm in a black sea in the elemental chaos. El Hydra's agents seek a way to release her from her sealed chambers. A wide variety of elemental beasts inhabits the areas inside and outside El Hydra's keep, including a kraken that patrols the outlying waters, listening to El Hydra's song and devouring any interlopers who come too near the fortress's walls. El Hydra is the princess of elemental water, whose forces tear ships apart in the seas, smash mountains down into dust, and drown any who would dare claim dominion over the oceans. For her keep in the deepest reaches of the elemental chaos, she commands her servants to seek the power of the Elder Elemental Eye. El Hydra's command over water serves her well in combat. She is able to engulf and drown her enemies in a swirling mass. The area around her is as violent as a stormy sea, knocking attackers to the ground. Her indomitable will makes her difficult to control in combat. As with her elemental servants, magical cold can freeze her body and make it brittle to follow up blows. If she's badly wounded, she goes berserk, rampaging across the battlefield to slay her enemies.
That seems like your best bet. I mean, how do you fight water?
Yeah, freezing it seems like a good way to go about it. By the way, in fourth edition, El Hydra is a level 33 solo creature.
Oh shit.
Okay. Because that game goes 30. Up to level 30. Yeah. I believe, and we're gonna read her stat block later, but I believe the version we have in here is challenge rating 16 or 18 or something like that.
Okay.
So
I'll be pulling that up after our
We'll take a look. But I distinctly remember the 4E version of her seeming whoa, powerful compared
33. I mean, because the level 21 through 30 is superhero stats,
right? Basically you are a demigod, I believe. So the way it works is in fourth edition is you have heroic tier, which is 1 to 10, which is
mm-hmm.
normal D&D high level fantasy stuff, and then you get into paragon tier where you choose a paragon path. It's a specialty. You're not just a ranger, you're a sylvan archer. You're not just a fighter, you're a blade master,
Yeah.
Whatever that is. And then at level 21, you get into epic, and you have what are called your epic destinies, and all the epic destinies are demigod level shit. There's literally one called demigod, so you could just be a demigod.
Yeah.
There's chosen, there's archfey, there's archdevil, there's archmage, there's a lot of arches. But all high level stuff. And that just becomes part of your character. So not only are you a fighter, blade master, but you're also a chosen of Melora.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So
we've definitely done this particular bit on the show before.
Have we? Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm calling upon it, but my memory of it is so vague that it required that explanation.
So again, level 33. Yeah. And you're expected to be a demigod level power in order to fight her.
Right.
All Hydra fights with the violence of the stormy seas. Those that confront her head on are quickly engulfed and begin to drown. All Hydra can call ranged opponents to her, where she might engulf and drown them as well. All Hydra is a master of her element, transforming her watery form into highly corrosive salt water.
Ooh.
Yes. All Hydra's followers are not organized the way other cults or religions are. This is where 4E deviates from everything we talked about before, about her like super organized cult.
Right, yeah.
Only scarred pirates and lurkers of the deep seas dare call upon her. They know that her wrath seeks followers and unbelievers alike. Cults of Al-Hydra find their homes in the wreckage of shoreline forts, the flooded cellars of coastal cities, and in seaside grottos. Followers of Al-Hydra know of her thirst for the power contained in the Elder Elemental Eye. She passes this thirst on to her most devout followers. So she's less of a... Like in 4E, she's not trying to become a god, and she's nowhere near becoming a god. She's just very much a primordial. And
yeah,
that
okay.
is what she is. Unsavory seafarers whisper Al-Hydra's name and carry her totems under their sea-stained shirts. Her followers know she is not one to listen to their prayers. She devours whatever and whoever she wants to, loyal or not. Yet these sea dogs cannot help but admire her power. Her most devoted followers take vengeance on the gods and their followers and seek to quench their mistress's thirst for power by releasing the Elder Elemental Eye. Followers of Al-Hydra give their enemies over to the Elemental Princess by drowning them in seawater.
Mm-hmm.
The more powerful these victims are, then brought back to life to serve... The more powerful of these victims are then brought back to life to serve the Elemental Princess as her knights. Okay. So in fourth edition, she has like a knighthood.
Okay.
And that's probably the most organized faction for her.
I know a knighthood sounds so like clean and fun.
I know,
and crispy,
yeah.
But this is probably just some fucking pirates.
Yeah, it's just probably. Well, it's like the way I see it is it's like they're like revenant. They're like Davy Jones dudes. That's literally what they are. Yeah. They're Davy Jones dudes.
It's required you have, I like the flavor in the second to last paragraph here. Yeah. Sea stained shirts, salty sea dogs. They're literally just like, you know, they could probably drink ocean water and it's probably fine.
Yeah, probably.
For them.
For them.
Yeah.
Don't you try it yourself.
They just kind of have constant dysentery.
So that's the end of the 4E, the 4E specific part.
Uh-huh.
I only have one final fun archimental fact left. Al-Hydra Imix, Yancy Bin, who is the evil elemental guy of air, and Ogrimash, which is the archimental of evil earth, mm-hmm. once pursued a legendary artifact known as the Egg of the Phoenix. This black onyx egg-shaped object increases the user's magical prowess and expands in size and power as the user discovers how to open it further. All of the Archimentals have long coveted the egg and once made a desperate bid to capture it, but they were thwarted by a Kirin aided by champions from the material plane.
Goddamn adventurers.
I know, right? Well, Hydra still actively hunts for the egg, both to keep it from Imix and to use it against him.
Sure, why not? Are the others about it? I don't remember that in the Imix episode.
This came up in All Hydra stuff, so I think there was probably a time where they were all in on it, and now everyone doesn't care about it except for All Hydra. She's still kind of about
okay. it. Okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, yeah. I hope that would be fun for All Hydra, you know?
Yeah, I hope All Hydra gets
success. I don't go
success.
That far to say I hope she succeeds. I just mean, like, that's some fun. Like, I'm glad you get to keep the side quest going.
Yeah.
You're keeping the hope of the Phoenix Egg alive. You think that would be the least... likely one to
you
be
know,
able to wield
I thought about
such
that,
a thing.
But I think that's maybe why she's fixed. She's like, oh, it's fire, like Imix. I got to keep it from him, you know? I feel like that. And Imix is probably like, bro, I'm already fire. I don't want it.
Yeah, I know, right? If I just capture it and drown it in my infinite
It'll
soup.
Be like I drowned Imix himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, let's take a short rest.
Okay.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
We've returned.
Indeed we have.
We're fucking back.
Indeed we are.
You're back again, Will.
Yes, I am back again.
Will's still kind of recovering a little bit.
A little bit.
So we're taking a break from Ilyin and Beeren.
Yes.
For this episode, next episode, no Ilyin and Beeren.
I just can't handle it.
Sorry about that. They did a lot of shopping, and they're on their way to the next thing.
I mean, they had to kill a lot of orcs at the end there.
They're very tired. Still killing orcs for two episodes.
They're still killing orcs.
With the help of Shopify.
Absolutely.
Thanks to Shopify for sponsoring those. Yeah. So in the meantime, you can go to patreon.com/thedungeoncast. That was the only way Will was able to buy medicine while he was sick.
It's because
of your guys' contributions.
You guys are funding my healing.
That's not that far of a stretch. So
no, it's not.
So thank you guys so much, patrons. We really appreciate you. Is there something coming up for patrons?
Yes. And the custom art piece that we're going to use in the custom Patreon merch, the yearly annual one, finally is done.
All right, cool.
It's gorgeous. It's Ilyin and Beeren centric. We're going to slap it on.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
We're going to slap it on some sort of merchandise. It's going to be decided in the next couple weeks here, and then we're going to start.
It's got to be a t-shirt, right?
I'd like it to be a t-shirt, but I've had bad luck with Patreon t-shirt quality.
We have had bad luck with their t-shirts.
So I kind of want to move away from t-shirts. But it's going to be something, and it's going to be awesome, and you guys are going to get it, and we'll make the announcement as soon as we know exactly what it is, and we have it all lined up.
Oh,
but yeah, that
piece
literally finished like yesterday, so
yeah,
finally done. It's a little late, sorry guys, but it's coming your way. I'm very excited about it.
Yep. Okay. Please support us on Patreon. Also, thank you guys for doing Apple Podcast reviews. They trickle in these days. So anybody that wants to get in there and fucking stamp your name,
please do.
In the long rest, we're gonna be doing a few new things, less pluggy, more like audience interaction stuff, and podcast reviews are gonna be one of those things. We're gonna kind of rotate between reading YouTube comments, fan mail from the PO box and the email, as well as reading podcast reviews, YouTube comments. Did I say that? We're gonna rotate through those things, and I've got a setup. So let's get back to the episode,
though. Yeah, let's get back to Ohydra. So we're gonna go over her stat block, but I'm also looking at this fifth edition official artwork of Ohydra, and I gotta say, she's probably like 30 feet tall here.
She looks
not 20.
She looks fucking tubular.
She looks very tubular. There's a lot of tubes.
Yeah, man.
Like, five people could be surfing in five different directions on her right now.
Hella cresting.
There's a guy who's trying to surf in her down there. You see him?
Oh, as he's bodyboarding.
He's bodyboarding in the
He's not doing good.
No, he's doing terrible.
Oh, no, the rocks. I just noticed the rocks.
There are rocks.
He's about to be pushed upon the rocky shores.
Indeed, indeed he is.
But damn. Ohydra is reliant on the rocky shores. Some earth involved here.
Yes, indeed. Although she'll never admit it. Let's go over stats.
Yeah. So we got a huge elemental of neutral evil. Armor class of 18, natty. Hit points are 324, 24 D12 plus 168, chonk. Speed is 50 feet of, like, I guess, is it all swimming speed? But there's 50 feet of land movement.
Of land movement,
and
yeah.
The swim speed is 100 feet.
Yes.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot.
And should be a lot.
It should be.
But I think it should just be infinity.
No, she's got 6 seconds to get to a place.
That's
so
true.
So
I'm not all water.
I think 100's good. I think 100's good, and I think 50 on land's good. I'm happy with the speeds, personally.
Is all Hydra the same exact molecules of water all the time?
That's a great question.
Are they changing out?
I think they change out, personally.
Yeah, they're leaving that murk behind. That's their waste.
Sure.
Well, Hydra's constantly shitting.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or peeing or whatever it is they do. Excrementing.
She's excreting.
Much detritus. Saving throws, strength plus 11, constitution plus 13, and wisdom plus 10. We have damage resistances for lightning, bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing from non-magical attacks. Why lightning?
Okay, so, well, because the idea here is that, like,
this is before Pokemon.
She conducts the lightning. It doesn't hurt her.
Oh, right? Just passes through.
Indeed.
Like Last Airbender style.
Yes. And I think, I don't know if she has a grab attack, but the way I would rule it is if someone's grappled by her and you hit her with lightning, it's going to hurt anybody touching the water is what I would rule.
That's tasty.
So forgive me here on this one, but I really feel strongly that bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage, whether it's magical or not, should be resisted because she's made of fucking water.
I don't know what I mean? I don't know, man. Have you ever splashed someone in the pool? That shit just goes.
Yeah, I just mean, if you slash her, I don't care if it's with Excalibur, you're going to take a chunk of water off her. She's going to be fine. Like, I don't know.
I don't know. She's all water.
She's all water.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
You're in the weeds here. The damage immunity is acid, cold, and
poison.
That's right.
But that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. This time.
It usually does, actually. That's the problem, why poison is so weak.
It's so strong until it's not.
Yeah.
It makes combat so long. Condition immunities, charmed, frightened, paralyzed, petrified, poisoned, prone, and restrained. Damn. Can you imagine somebody restraining this? You need a big old bucket.
The biggest
pool.
Okay.
We'll get her in my pool, right, guys.
Hold on. We're going on a tangent, and I don't care if you cut it or not, but please don't cut it. There is an anime on Netflix called Delicious in Dungeon, and I tried to tell you about this on Alien Beard. But have you heard of this?
Oh, no. Well, I guess, yes, I have.
Okay.
By what you just told me,
okay.
I guess I have.
It's basically, I'm not going to get into the details, but essentially there's these people trying to get deep into this mega dungeon and they can't afford food, so they start cooking the monsters. But it treats, when they cook the monsters, it's like a straight up like slice of life, like really relaxing. Like, and then we do this, we skin this and blah, blah. And it looks delicious as hell. And the show's great. The show is very good. Uh-huh. I'm just going to say that. But in the latest episode, it was literally the latest episode, they trapped a fucking powerful water elemental between two adamantine pots and boiled that sucker down.
Hey!
So you could do that to Ohydra.
I'm scared of making a steam demon. You know what I mean?
Well, and then they made a soup out of it and they ate it.
This show sounds wild.
Show is incredible, dude.
We got blindsight of 120 feet, passive perception of 14. She speak Aquan.
She only speaks Aquan. I find that interesting.
Yeah, we do that. Like, why don't they all speak Primordial? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if it's Fori, she'd definitely speak Primordial. But she only speaks Aquan, which means you can't talk to her. You can't have a conversation with her unless you happen to know Aquan.
Right. Yeah. Challenge rating is 18. 20K. The languages thing.
I knew it was sub 20.
Back to the languages thing. Yeah. There's an argument for just her knowing Aquan and only Aquan because she's the
body. She is water. It. Yeah, absolutely.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get it. I see it. Challenge rating 18, 20K XP. We got plus 6 to proficiency bonus. And now for the action-y stuff. Empowered attacks. Ohydra's slam attacks are treated as magical for the purpose of bypassing resistance and immunity to non-magical weapons.
That's fair.
Innate spellcasting. Ohydra's innate spellcasting ability is Charisma. Spell save DC 20 plus 12 to hit with spell attacks. She can innately cast the following spells requiring no material components at will. Wall of Ice.
That's a good one. I think that's like a level 5 spell.
Yes, three times a day, Ice Storm, one time a day, Storm of Vengeance, which I don't know these spells off the top of my head, but they sound strong as shit.
Yeah, I don't know either of those spells off the top of my head, but I think they're very high level.
She's getting the legendary resistance three times a day. If a Hydra fails a saving throw, she can choose to succeed.
Wall of Ice is a 6th level evocation spell, and she can cast that at will, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just a big old wall of ice that does freezy damage to people.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. So she can control the battlefield. That's fun.
Yeah.
Being able to just control the battlefield on that level is nice.
Magic resistance. Ohydra has advantage on saving throws against spells and other magical effects. Water form. Ohydra can enter a hostile creature space and stop there. She can move through a space as narrow as 1 inch wide without squeezing. Oh, imagine where she can go if she squeezes.
Okay, so she can stop there. And so a lot of these... features that allow a monster to move into a hostile creature space and stop there usually say, but they take damage for doing so. Not in her case. Now, it would be really cool if she has something, and it's yet remains to be seen because we haven't finished the stat block, but if she has something special she can do, if she's in someone's space, you know, because, they should be drowning in there if she is.
There are rules for drowning, so yes. I think you just enter rules for drowning and that.
Well, point. You should, but there's nothing written here that says you do, but that's what I would do.
A creature can hold its breath for a number of minutes equal to 1 plus its constitution modifier for a minimum of 30 seconds.
I think it should be less than that because holding your breath for 1 minute, it can be really difficult for your average person. So I don't think it should be a minimum of 1+. I think it should be just a total of minutes equal to your con mod or whatever.
Well, this is the PHP, yeah. I believe. So
well, I think the PHP is wrong. Anyways.
when a creature runs out of breath or it is choking, it can survive for a number of rounds equal to its con mod, minimum of 1 round. At the start of its next turn, it drops to 0 HP and is dying, and it can't regain hit points or be stabilized until it can breathe again. So it's you're like dying plus.
Okay. But that's still a lot of wiggle room. Like minutes, number one, are a long time in combat, and then plus 4 rounds of combat or two or three or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, the con is good. Con is a good stat. Good.
Yeah.
Let's get into the actions.
Yeah.
Multi-attack. Ohydra makes 2 slam attacks or 2 water jet attacks. That sounds fun. Can't wait for that. slam, melee weapon attack plus 11 to hit, reach of 10 feet. One target. Hit for 21 or 3d10 plus 5 bludgeoning damage, and the target is grappled, escape DC 19. Ohydra can grapple up to 4 targets. When Ohydra moves, all creatures she is grappling move with her.
That's fun.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Water jet is a ranged weapon attack, plus 12 to hit, range of 120 feet on one target. It's going to hit for 21 or 66 bludgeoning damage, and the target is knocked prone if it fails a DC 19 strength saving throw.
Also pretty nice.
And then I remember Imix did this as well, but summon elementals once per day. Ohydra summons up to 3 water elementals and loses 30 HP for each elemental she summons.
I don't like that.
It's situationally good.
We did this exact conversation. Yeah,
it's situationally good. Summoned elementals have maximum HP, appear within 100 feet of Ohydra, and disappear if Ohydra is reduced to 0 HP.
She's the queen of water elementals. She's basically, besides whatever few gods live there, the most powerful entity on that plane. And you're telling me she can't just summon some water elementals? She has to take chunks of her own body to make these... Bullshit.
Yeah. The things that swayed you in the Imix episode, I believe, were... this thing is outside of their like main area of play?
I guess it would have to be that. Like, and like if you're gonna have her in her lair or in her domain, then there should just be water elementals. She doesn't need to summon them.
Yeah,
and which is true.
You kind of need a cap on that at some level, but not 30 HP in that scenario. Yeah, in this scenario, also what swayed you was that the HP output for these water elementals was much higher than the 30. They had like 100+ HP.
That does help me feel better, but like having ran players at like level 12 and above, 324 HP ain't shit. You guys will chew through that in two rounds if I don't do something about it.
Yeah. I think you should have, depending on the circumstances and if this is your combat, that those water elementals should start there and to have more sort of like, what if all Hydra decides it's time to flee, then let me summon some water elementals to go eat up action economy.
That's a good usage for sure. Yeah, so, absolutely.
Legendary actions, all Hydra can take three of those, choosing from the options below. I guess I'll just, it's good to go over this just as a refresher for people every time. So
yeah.
Only one legendary action option can be used at a time and only at the end of another creature's turn. All Hydra regains spent legendary actions at the start of her turn. Crush. One creature that all Hydra is grappling is crushed for 21 or 3d10 plus 5 bludgeoning damage. You got to have this. The language is right. Crush, that's a very surfer term.
It is. I just watched Finding Nemo with her kid. Mr. Turtle was my dad. You can call me Crush.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Fling costs two actions. All Hydra releases one creature she is grappling by flinging the creature up to 60 feet away from her. That's horrifying.
That's great.
In a direction of her choice, hopefully. If the flung creature comes into contact with a solid surface, such as a wall or floor, the creature takes 1d6 bludgeoning damage for every 10 feet it was flung, which is just normal fall damage, although you're not falling. You could get flung sideways.
It's equivalent to fall damage, though. So 66 bludge. It's like, I don't know, having them grappled is nice, though, and you're giving that up. 60 feet's far, though.
You might want to fling somebody that you don't want grappled. Grapple them, and then they start doing stuff to you.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Fair. It's like, okay, never mind, you're over there.
Yeah.
Okay,
although, having the, I guess, like, Shocking Grasp is a really cool cantrip I like to take a lot, and it'll give you, like, the ability to escape somebody. You know, they can't take reactions. That's not really going to do anything here. They're going to resist the lightning, so...
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably plenty of other things you can do while you're being grappled that are annoying for the grappler.
Sure.
Water to acid costs all three actions. All Hydra transforms her watery body into acid. This effect lasts until All Hydra's next turn. Any creature that comes into contact with All Hydra or hits her with a melee attack while standing within 5 feet of her takes 11 or 2d10 acid damage. Any creature grappled by All Hydra takes 22 or 4d10 acid damage.
Okay, so this is a super move you're aiming for. You're trying to grapple four of your party members.
Yeah.
And then turn her into an acid blob.
It's pretty fucking cool.
I kind of like it. It's very close to being an ooze, and you know how I feel about oozes.
We like oozes on this show. We like
we do.
The elements, dragons, oozes.
Yep.
I like dwarves.
I also like dwarves and elves. I'm a big elf guy.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's cliche. Elves rock.
Are we doing the lairs?
We're doing lairs. Let's do it.
All Hydra's native to the elemental plane of water, obviously. She can be found there in the black depths of vast seas or enthroned among jagged reefs. All Hydra waits for the chance to enter the material plane through elemental water nodes. I almost thought that said noodles.
She can encroach through your cup of noodle.
Well, Hydra's Italian. She likes to go through your noodle tubes into your house. Okay. Or when called by the proper rituals. Whether she is in her elemental domain or temporarily occupying a water nod, node. I cannot say that word. My brain wants to do something else. All Hydra commands the waters around her, and she can shape them to her will. Lair actions. All Hydra can command the waters around herself to take lair actions on the elemental plane of water or in any elemental water node, such as the plunging torrents described in Chapter 5. Sorry, I'm just reading D&D Beyond verbatim at this point. On initiative count of 20, losing initiative ties, All Hydra uses her lair action to cause one of the following effects. Pools of water in the lair surge outward in a grasping tide. Any creature within 20 feet of the pool must succeed on a DC 20 strength saving throw or be pulled up to 20 feet into the water and knocked prone. Water within 120 feet of All Hydra becomes murky and opaque until initiative count 20 of the next round. A creature with dark vision can't see through the water and light can't illuminate it.
That's so she literally is stinkifying the water she passes through.
She be shitting. A freezing fog fills a 40-foot radius sphere with within 120 feet of all Hydra, lasting until initiative count 20 of the next round. Creatures and objects within or beyond the fog are heavily obscured. A creature that enters the freezing cloud for the first time on a turn or starts its turn there takes 10 or 3d6 cold damage.
Okay.
And then we have the regional effects, so if you get in close, get ready.
Yeah.
Ohydra's presence in an elemental node creates a number of widespread effects, bad weather, strong tides, and increasing aggression from dangerous sea life. Violent downpours become frequent within 10 miles of the lair. Man, I forgot earlier in the episode to ask more about like rain, because that's scary.
Yeah.
A downpour occurs once every 2d12 hours and lasts 1d3 hours. Downpours are so heavy that creatures moving overland travel at half normal speed. Within 5 miles of the lair, currents and tides are exceptionally strong and treacherous, and ability checks made to safely navigate or control a vessel moving through these waters has disadvantage. Aquatic creatures that have an intelligence score of 2 or lower within 1 mile of the lair must succeed on a DC 15 wisdom saving throw when they enter the area. If the saving throw succeeds, the creature is frightened and attempts to leave the area, remaining frightened while within it. On a failure, the creature becomes highly aggressive and remains in the area for 24 hours. Holy shit. While in this state, the creature gains advantage on saving throws against charm and fear effects. That's a lot of nasty fish, bro.
Indeed.
Natural spring.
The minnows.
Mermaids, all kinds of shit. I guess there's not
No, they have higher intelligence than 2, so they're safe from this effect.
Yeah, so it's mostly like fish and
it's
stuff.
Mostly fish, yeah. And there's a lot of fish in the sea.
There's a lot of fish. Some of them have sharp teeth. Some of them can bite through fucking rocks and coral. Natural springs and pools within 1 mile of the lair form intermittent portals to the elemental plane of water, allowing elemental creatures into the mortal world to dwell near those points.
That's fun stuff.
It's kind of fucked up.
Here comes a Kraken.
I guess. That's a big old pool.
Yeah.
Krakens are like the fucking bishops of, they're like the harbingers and priests of fucking bad shit in the ocean. Water shit.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a fucking Hydra. Or not a Hydra. Kraken. Everyone's got a fucking Kraken, bro.
Yeah.
Multiple.
If you got to water your domain and you're evil, like, get yourself a Kraken, bro. What are you doing?
At least a couple. Kraken chariot. Kraken submarine.
Can you imagine?
I can. I am doing it.
That's fucking awesome.
Do I need to read the rest of this?
No, the rest is just lore.
Oh, yeah. We did that part. Yeah.
So that's Ohydra. I don't remember the Immix stat block, but I don't remember feeling as impressed as I do with the Ohydra stat block. I feel a little bit more impressed here.
I think so, too. It's a little better.
Yeah.
I like the ranged attack. It's fucking sick.
Yeah. I do find it interesting that Ohydra can make 2 slam attacks or 2 water jet attacks. Why can't she do one of each?
Why not? I mean, it's your game.
Yeah.
Is all Hydra legacy content now? I see this super
probably
L
because we got this L here, right?
Non-canon.
Half of almost everything
take this L.
Yeah, 5e ever produced is legacy content now.
I know. It's so weird.
Yeah, I saw them talking about it in the Discord. It's like, half of it's legacy content.
Yeah. I saw a meme that was like, hey, they missed something sus. You know how they're the Hadouzi and all that shit. They tried to rewrite that stuff.
That's not legacy content yet.
I know, but they tried to walk it back.
Yeah.
There was something else that they missed. They overlooked it because it was wasn't very good.
Oh, yeah.
I wish I remembered before I brought it up it was.
I'm seeing if Ohydra's in Monsters of the Multiverse, and she is not. So she remains legacy content.
Yeah. What's the module they're all from? Elemental Princess of Elemental Evil or whatever.
Princess of the Apocalypse.
Of the Apocalypse.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Well, that's what we got for Ohydra. That's the stat block. That's the lair and regional effects.
You got any thoughts about her in general?
I don't know. I'm more stuck on, I like the regional effects for dragons better, especially the
dragon stuff.
Fizzband stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Stuff was... I remember reading that shit and being like, wow, this is tasty.
Yeah, Fizzband's was a very tasty book.
Yeah, all the ocean stuff seems to recycle itself. I was kind of getting at that with the Krakens and, there is the ocean water stuff, and there you have it. Aboleth and all that stuff.
I mean, there's a lot of it, but just generally.
They've all got it all.
They have all got it all,
except
right?
Except for the Itchitachital.
No, that's Demogorgon
right.
only.
Yeah. Galen right. Dagon, too.
Oh, okay. They're fucking married as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a long rest.
Okay. Hey Hey, everybody, welcome to the long rest. Like I mentioned at the short rest, if you guys were there and paying attention, we're going to start doing the long rest a little different. We're going to reserve it for more like the fan interaction stuff. So today, I'm going to start with some fan mail, because I went to the P.O. box after, you know, a little bit of time went by because I wasn't really getting a lot of stuff there. Mm-hmm. And then there was a lot.
Yeah.
And we're in March now, so a lot of the stuff is from February, January.
Okay, okay.
I don't think there's a lot from December.
Okay, that's good. So we didn't miss too much.
No, not too much. I'd gone in December, and then I think I'd gone early January too, but I went in February, end of February, and I was like, oh, shoot. I should more regularly come here. Somebody told me that I can set up PO box alerts when we get something, and I forgot to do that. Hopefully I'll remember this week. We've got a lot going on. It's tax season. So I want to read these postcards first. We've got two postcards. The first one that I happen to have in my hand, not that it was the first one that came in, is from the Mammoth Cave National Park. It's got a picture of what I assume is the Mammoth Cave National Cave.
Yeah, it looks very cave-like.
Yes, the mites, the tights, they're all there.
The mites and tights are both there.
A lot of cool formations, and then there's somebody with a lantern cap.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Who sent it to us?
So this is from, it was addressed to Ill Lee N and Beern, CEO of the Dungeon Cast.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then our P.O. box address, which is 1784 Upland, California, 91785. It's in the notes. It's in the notes of like all the recent episodes for the last like 2 years. Happy Valentine's Day, you two. Here's a postcard from the Underdark.
Hell yeah.
I hope your quest for the pot of potential pillage is going well. Thank you for your hard work, Matt Stinson.
Thank you, Matt. I hope you didn't fart down there.
Don't do that.
No, you're not supposed to do that.
Also, Will, and this is handy to have, this card grants +1 on all saving throws within the Underdark.
Oh, nice. Yeah, let's keep that on hand.
Yeah, man.
I don't go to the Underdark often, and by often, I mean I've never been, but the day I do, I'm taking that with me.
I'm bringing a bunch of dryer sheets, and I'm loading my pants up with them. So if I do happen to fart down there, it is phased
out. You're safe, for sure.
Okay. Let's see. We got another postcard from, who's this? Christian, you wrote your I think it's Barrera.
Okay. That's the last name I've heard before.
It was written into like these,
let me see,
these Morse code hashes.
It very much was. I would say Barrera is the way to go.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if we got it wrong, Christian, but you did write it amongst a bunch of hashtags.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but we really appreciate it. I think this is you on the front.
What?
And like pictures of you and all your family
or friends
and stuff. Like there's people dressed up, and like there's a picture down here with the people with like giant D20s, I think.
That's freaking cool.
And just all kinds of stuff. Yeah. So the postcard from Christian, thank you. The message seemed a little personal, so we'll keep that off air, but we did read it. So thank you very much. And then I definitely went towards the end of December to the P.O. box, but we got a Christmas card.
Maybe it came in late.
I think it must have, because it says December 5th. I definitely went like before Christmas, though.
Okay.
But anyway, Merry Christmas is the front of it. We got a very nice card. Ooh, see, Will?
Very fancy. Yeah. I like the tree.
Will and Brian, Merry Christmas. I hope this card finds you well. Congrats on wrapping up the year of the artifact.
Woo.
This has been my first year with your podcast, and it has been great. I'm not really playing at the moment, but I'm trying to keep up with the Pathfinder remastered news. There's some big changes to their home setting to get further away from Wizards of the Coast. I think that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
Elements, did y'all get any cool gaming stuff for Christmas? You should talk about it on the podcast if you did. I'm hoping for some minis to paint. Thank you for all your hard work. Matt Stinson, the Swords in Stereo podcast. Ooh, another podcaster. That's a cool way to go about that. The card says, the flavor text on the card, your favorite traditions and happiest memories, the closeness of loved ones too, a home bright with laughter, a heart filled with joy. May Christmas time bring these to you.
Very nice.
Fuck yeah,
very
Matt
nice
Stinson.
Hallmark or whoever wrote that.
Thank you, Matt Stinson.
Indeed, Matt.
It's an American's greetings.
American
card.
Greetings.
I'm glad I turned it over to check because it says P.S. Are y'all going to Gen Con or Gary Con in 2024?
Those are great questions.
No.
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 Mostly because I don't have any time in my life to do anything.
That's fucking far, bro.
That too.
Wisconsin's crazy. Although,
I'd love to start going to conventions, but this damn book is written, I don't know if I'm going anywhere.
I'm sure Luke would have us if we
asked him, but, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
if
for anyone who hasn't checked that episode out, we interview Luke Gygax, who puts on Gary Con.
Yes, we did.
In rural Wisconsin.
Yeah, which is, well, I mean, that's where they lived. Yeah.
It's funny, my wife's from there.
Really? I thought she's from Wisconsin. From Chicago.
Her extended family's from Chicago.
Oh, no shit. Wow.
She was born out here and then in California, and then they moved to
Wisconsin.
And she was there until she was like 9.
Okay, yeah. She had some childhood out there.
My wife, Lore.
Your wife, Lore. Well, real quick, to answer some of the questions, I don't think I got anything gaming related for Christmas, but I have gotten a lot of gaming gifts recently. I got a lot, like 2 or 3 dice sets from my fiance.
Oh, cool.
And a couple really cool books. Random table books, like random traps and puzzles and stuff like that.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's to answer your question there.
Oh, I saw that book you were talking about. I saw it at Target.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, I got a book made by the same people that's focused on traps and puzzles, and it's very good.
We should do, I really want to do a traps and puzzles
episode. I'm down.
Then maybe we should have that book as our center. Maybe.
Maybe, yeah.
Reach out to the creators, see if they want to do an interview.
That would be super cool.
I'm not scared of you other creators anymore.
Yeah, we can do that. We
can do that.
Yeah,
people seem to want to talk about their stuff on our show. I think that's a good idea.
That is cool.
All right, we got a long letter here from December 27th, so I guess I missed this one too. But writing you all from Province... Oh, Will and Brian / Brian and Will. Writing you all from Provincetown, Massachusetts, at the other end of Route 6, the Grand Army of the Republic Highway. Wow, that's okay. Which used to run all the way to Long Beach, California, until 1964, when California renumbered a bunch of sections, so now it only runs to Bishop, California.
I'm not sure where Bishop is. I do know where Long Beach is. My brother-in-law lives there.
I think Bishop's like 5 hours north of us or more.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it's more like
still,
8 hours.
It's still across the country.
It's fucking far. Yeah.
Well, no, I meant the road. The road itself is across
the
country. Oh,
the road does go across the country. Yeah. Not coast to coast, though, the 10. Which makes it the second longest road in America, 11th in the world, and that's in parentheses, and then in double parentheses, still technically the longest continuous in the U.S. since Route 20 has a break where it passes through Yellowstone, NP in Wyoming. Okay. Sick facts.
Sick road lore. Okay, let's go.
Anyhow, in all caps, I was driving back from my mom's place in upstate New York yesterday after the holidays and passed the 8-hour drive listening to your older episodes, specifically all of the series on Gem Dragons back-to-back in order. That must be an interesting, because we've parsed those out.
We
just
did.
Just listen to those back-to-back must be cool. I know it's a bit of a and then the time that goes by in between each one, I've like forgotten stuff. So
oh,
like,
definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
Let's see. I know it's a bit of a throwback, but I did have the urge to write now after listening again. In the Emerald Dragons episode, that's episode 276, y'all made mention of the 50 State Quarters Initiative.
Did we?
We must have. I hate to be that nerd, but I did get real excited since I had the book and did end up completing mine back sometime
in
the early 2010s.
Hell yeah.
Then I never thought about it again until y'all talked about it. Well, sick. Memory unlocked.
Indeed.
That said, I'm actually writing to put in my opinion on the effects of the Gem Dragons. The way it is stated, when the dragon dies, the animals it attracted and made horny, which yes, many, many horny lizards, return to normal numbers after 1d10 days. Uh-huh. And the way y'all were saying it was that they all have a seppuku moment or launch themselves into
that
lava off a cliff.
Very much sounds like what we would say.
Disney did the lemmings wrong, and we should talk about it more.
We should.
I think it would act more as a mass exodus. They all just wander off now that the inexplicable draw that lured them there is gone.
I guess that makes sense. I like my seppuku by lava better, but you know what? That makes sense.
They go on to say, I mean, it's only 6 miles. That's not an unreasonable distance for some of those animals to meander out of in a couple of days. Maybe not the amethyst fish. They're kind of stuck in a mountain
that's
lake.
True.
Poor horny bastards.
I forgot about the gem dragons.
That's
and
a salty.
Horniness.
That's a salty lake, bro.
A very salty lake.
Anyhow, I just wanted to say hello. Love what y'all do, and it strangely makes me miss when I had a longer commute. current, it's like 5 minutes on foot. When I kept up with episodes more easily.
I will say this for folks who they primarily listen to podcasts on commute, which mm-hmm. I used to be one of these people as well. I listen to as much podcasts as I did before I worked at home. And the way I do it is I just listen to podcasts whenever I'm doing chores.
Me too.
Yeah, if I'm doing dishes, I'm listening to podcasts. If I'm cleaning the house, I'm doing a podcast. If I'm making the bed or whatever, cooking, I'm listening to a podcast.
Yep.
So that's how I do it.
Eating lunch, laundry, sweeping,
yeah.
and watering plants, baby.
There we go.
Feeding my turtle. Shout out to Demogorgon.
Shout out to Demogorgon.
Don't fart in the Underdark. Poof, poof. Oh, these little poofs almost look like little wieners if you turn them sideways.
I'm pretty sure they're farts.
Yeah, they're farts for sure, but they look like wieners.
Okay.
Tebow, spelled like Thibault, but they provided the pronunciation for me. P.S. I hope the Route 6 and quarter mentions sent y'all on a tangent.
Actually, it was the horny lizards that sent us on the tangent.
Yeah, I do. I think I've said all I needed to say about the quarters in that episode.
Whatever you said was said, and that's what was said.
We had them.
We had them. I had the book too. Yeah.
I loved all your letters. I saved the best for last, though.
Okay. Yeah. You've been hyping this one up. So what's going on?
Well, I let my wife read it first. She went to the P.O. box with me. I was like, you can read these if you want to see what people say. And she was like, oh, I'm so proud of you.
Oh, that's very sweet.
So this is from, I won't read your address. That's for me to know. Mr. Will Stark and Mr. Brian McDonald. Oh, do I? I don't think you. I rarely say my last name on the show.
You do, but they knew it.
They have our P.O. box 174, Upland, California 975, for anybody that wants to send letters. Dear Will and Brian, my name is Gray Freeman. I am sending this from my computer class in Western North Connecticut. I am 13 years old
in
eighth grade. Sorry for all the curse words. And I am sending this for a famous person, for a famous person business letter project. I love D&D and playing. I just started a campaign where I am DM. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
I also love the outdoors and building robots for the FTC competition.
Ooh, hell yeah.
We were allowed to send this to anyone. And I chose you guys, and I'm required to ask what technology you use in your daily lives.
Okay.
Do we want to hit, let's hit that first.
Let's hit that. Yeah, let's hit that while we're here. Daily lives, I have my...
Cell phone,
obviously.
He means for work. For what we do for the show.
I have this HP PC that I use for mostly for browsing, but also for writing. And then I do a lot of video editing on my MacBook Pro at home. Most of the recording stuff we keep here at the studio. I had some stuff at the house, but I hardly use it because I don't really record there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think, is there anything else? That's about the not a lot of technology, just a couple of different laptops. One's a Mac, one's a PC.
Yeah, we've got...
You do use a lot more.
Yes. So we've got our professional lighting kind of situation that we use for YouTube. We have a Canon camera. We used to use a DSLR camera, but those have like
30-minute limits,
recording length limitations. Yeah. But they were a good option when we first started.
When we first started,
we used cell phones. Will and I.
Yes, we did.
We kind of got this thing. It's like, okay, if we want to make a YouTube project, we need uniform cameras for our faces.
We did. And we went out and bought the same LG V20s.
Yeah, we went and bought V20s because they had removable batteries.
They did. We also played a lot of Pokemon Go back in those days, and removable batteries came in handy.
Yes, we just slapped those chuckers in, bro. So aside from the lighting, we've upgraded to another Canon. I forget the name of the camera. I'm looking at it right now, but
I can go look.
Yeah, if you don't mind, it's a handheld, and has those limitations have been lifted and removed. For the microphones,
it says Vixia HFG50.
A Vixia HFG50.
You got it.
I think the reason we got that over a different one is because it was better in low light, which I think the other ones are better in low light. They have low light sensors, which I think Will and I had like a lighting issue that we wanted to hash out. And then Will's like, what if we just put this giant light in the back? And I think that low light sensor probably
we'll
had something to do with that.
Just put a beam cannon in the back.
It worked.
It did work.
According to Will.
It worked better.
Yes.
There's always room for improvement.
There absolutely is. But we're sticking with what we got right now.
Yeah.
Our microphones, we started out with Shure SM57s.
Now we're Shure SM7Bs.
The 7Bs, yeah. A more standard, you know, they take phantom power. I've got an audio interface that the microphones plug into. It provides phantom power to the microphones. I also use a MacBook 2020 model, which it was just time to make that purchase. We'd been coasting on another Mac for a while and it really needed an upgrade. Although I want to upgrade this one again because the 2020 model's got some weird stuff. It's mostly the port, the ports and plugs. It's only got two ports on one side. It's very strange. Anyway, I use an iPad for when we're doing the show. Oh, I got criticized for like, oh, that guy's just scrolling his phone. I'm looking at the notes.
No, he's looking at the notes. Shut the fuck up. God damn, dude.
I know. I can't do anything right.
Sorry. I know. It's stupid.
Somebody calls me out for something. I'm trying to be more involved with what Will's saying rather than going on huge tangents constantly.
I mean, I like the tangents. But anyways.
I've got, yeah, that's the computer.
Well, that was hardware, right? Is there any more hardware?
That's pretty much all the hardware. I mean, I have like instruments and stuff. Like,
yeah. Oh, and then when it comes to software, I'm using Final Cut Pro.
Same.
I mean, I'm on the Google Drive constantly, and we have a OneDrive I'm constantly using.
Yeah, cloud-based storage has been critical to our operation.
Oh yeah, and then I'm using InDesign for some book stuff. And that's basically it. I'm software for my end.
Yeah, I do Logic Pro X for the audio stuff, mixing and mastering and all that stuff. And we've got like props. It's not really like show hardware, chargers, no, like crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think we covered it. I think we got it.
Yeah. And to continue onward, I use a school Chromebook to do schoolwork, and I also use my phone to listen to your podcast.
Cool.
I also listen to FBATS and Super Quest Saga.
Nice. Hell yeah. Thank you for supporting those shows.
I'm going to buy Star Seeker Guide to Drakenstar.
Thank you for supporting the book. I'm sorry it's taking so long. I'm working hard on it, though.
It'll be worth it.
Yeah.
The goal of writing this letter is to show my teacher that YouTubers do write back. My teacher has never had a YouTuber write back, so I want to prove him wrong, and he will give me extra credit. Please write back to prove my teacher wrong and tell me how
late are we on this?
You use tech in your daily life. I don't think we're super late, and I think if this had like a really stringent time thing, it probably would have been mentioned.
Maybe. But we will write back, though.
Yes. I choose to write to you instead of anyone else because I love your show. I also want to hear my letter be read on air because that has never happened to me before.
Well, here it is.
The second best part of your show is the grand adventures of Ilion and Beern. The best part is learning everything.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad you enjoy Ilion and Beern as well because we have a lot of fun making it. But yes, the lore is the heart of what we do.
Yeah, that is the show. I love learning about D&D and the random facts that I did not know. When I have the money to and am not living in my mother's controlled home, I will give you money in Astral Diamond Tier. Shout out to Demogorgon.
I mean, only do that if you can afford to do that. We'll greatly appreciate it. It's the highest tier possible on our Patreon.
We would really appreciate that,
but only please, do that if it's feasible for you. Where it's much more important that you just support the show, which you are doing in spades. So thank you, Mr. Gray Freeman.
And sincerely, Gray Freeman. We don't want anybody going into debt over the Dungeon Cast. Yeah, that's not what this is about. If you can support us, you should.
I mean, I'll take the Astral Diamonds. I'm just saying that.
For real.
Also,
and the sentiment is received. Indeed. And this was a really lovely letter. So
indeed. And we will write back. We'll probably.
Thank you, Gray. Yeah.
We'll probably start writing back after this.
Collab on this together. Yeah. But we are going to send it snail mail to you. I'm going to try to get that out tomorrow. Today's March 5th as we record, so March 6th, and hopefully we get this man Gray some extra credit.
Indeed,
tell his teacher we're podcasters first and YouTubers second. Yeah. And
but we are in fact YouTubers.
Fuck all them YouTubers that didn't write those kids back.
Yeah, indeed.
Maybe they get a lot of mail.
Yeah, the influx of mail. Who's to say? We don't know their lives.
We get just enough mail to be able to manage it.
That's
right.
True.
Now with
that's
the help true. Of our email support, Modico.
Indeed.
So thank you.
Very true.
That was it for the P.O. Box mail. Thank you guys so much. We really appreciate that. And with that, we're going to call it okay, so you're about to hear a thing we're going to pre-record and just slap onto a bunch of episodes. So this is it
for the audience interaction portion of the long rest. We'll see you guys
on the other side of this long rest.
Yeah, indeed.
Hey, everybody, we got some news for you about the Dungeon Cast. Will, do you want to hit it off with Star Seeker's Guide to Drakenstar? What's going on?
Well, absolutely. So Star Seeker's Guide to Drakenstar, the book based off of Super Quest Saga, the space sci-fi campaign that we ran for 3 years. I'm still working hard on it, and I wanted to say thank you to everybody who supported us both on Kickstarter and the backer kit. But for anyone interested in in backing us on the backer kit. I wanted to say that your time is limited. I will be closing the backer kit on April 1st, charging cards probably in May. I don't have the dates 100% on that when it comes to charging cards, but I will be closing out the backer kit on April 1st. I just really want to wrap a bow on this. And again, thank you to everyone who has supported. And yeah, go ahead and get in there. It's jackandstar.com. If you want to pre-order the books, and there's also the add-ons, there's the dice set and there's the poster, as well as a few other things. And yeah, go ahead and check it out. But just so everyone knows, I will be closing the backer kit on April 1st. So after that point, pre-orders will no longer be open. Everyone who's made their order will be getting their book, and there will be no more orders accepted. So
there you have it. So check out Star Seeker's Guide to Drakenstar. That's what was the website?
Drakenstar.com.
Drakenstar.com. It's based off of our actual play D&D game, Super Quest Saga, which we also encourage you to check out right now. FBATS is going to be airing again. So there should be new episodes up. Let's see. We got the merch store. We still have are working on our brand new merch store. We're going to have two merch stores. It's going to be a little weird for a second.
Yeah, but we have great news coming very soon about the new one.
Yeah, so you'll hear that soon. But our regular merch store with just the regular Dungeon Cast stuff is available. There's a link in the description below. You can also follow us on Discord. That's a place we love to interact with fans.
Indeed.
So come talk to us there. You can also find us on social media at the Dungeon Cast on X, Mastodon, and Instagram. Thank you to Will for doing stuff like that. And if you want to support us, one of the best ways to do that is by leaving a review, telling a friend, and by leaving a review, I mean on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you listen to the show, hitting that like and subscribe on YouTube, or supporting us on patreon.com/thedungeoncast. We have early episodes that are ad-free, along with a slew of other material that you can reference, including notes for the show, fun skits. Now we have an Ilion and Beeren tier. We have fucking all kinds of stuff. So go check it out. And with that, we're going to call it a game.
Let's call it a game. We'll talk to you guys later.
The Dungeon Cast.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.